So I wanted to speak today about a topic which I have gotten a lot of contact with in the last weeks. It's about loneliness. This topic is a very interesting topic because everybody at one point or another has to face the situation of loneliness. Now, I don't know why, but many people have written to me with themes that somehow are connected with this main theme of loneliness in the past few weeks. Now, we're not speaking about loneliness simply in the sense of being physically alone, that there's nobody else around you. Because somebody can be surrounded by hundreds of people and still feel quite alone. We find this when, all of us can find this when we are on, for example, long airplane flights or in the underground subways or just walking on the street. There's people everywhere, but there's no connection between people. And because there's no connection between people, we feel alone, even though there are many around us. You can contrast this with a hermit living in the forest or a yogi living in a mountain who doesn't feel alone at all, although there are no people around them. Now, maybe somebody could describe loneliness as a state of mind, but I would describe it really as a state of consciousness. Let's just examine for a second the various forms of feeling alone, the various ways in which loneliness can take place. Let's say you're a very artistic person and you like to have contact with others in some kind of artistic way. Well, you would feel alone if there was no one else around you who you could communicate with. The same for a musician, the same for a rocket scientist. Intellectually, we feel very comfortable when we have others around us or who we can sometimes associate with who share our mentality or share our interests. Professional sports people, people who ride horses, people who are firefighters, no matter who you are, politicians or financiers, business people, you do feel more comfortable, you feel more flowing energetically when you're around others who share your interests and share your capacities. And above all, every spiritualist knows that to be in a place or in a situation where there are no other spiritualists, one can feel very, very disturbed. It is the nature of people to be together with others because we are social animals. But there are other factors besides just simply social interactions, those which are based on the emotional interactions which feed us very deeply. Our emotional interactions are in many cases far superior or far of a greater quality. We very much appreciate them better when we can emotionally associate with others who are resonating with us in a very compatible way. I know that there are certain astrological personalities, according to the way in which their moon is situated or something like that. Kamala has to explain it better. I'm just a total amateur. Who very much thrive on the emotional closeness and depth. I know, for example, having moon in Cancer, whenever I'm around other moon in Cancers, immediately there's a connection. It's just immediate. You don't have to make a connection. You don't have to work to have a connection. You're just connected. And interestingly enough, these meetings or these get-togethers are somehow arranged by higher powers. I don't know how it works. I think that we send out vibrations to others or into the atmosphere around us, which says, hey, I'm like this. And other people say, hey, that's great. And we come together. I've also seen that in relationship with people who have other kinds of interests. Their energy goes out and it attracts a certain kind of person to come and connect with them. It is interesting how we resonate with certain persons quite well and with other persons not at all. And however, there are those persons who when we are not together with, we feel lonely. For example, for a spiritualist to be in a convention of animal killers, for example, would make one feel very, very lonely, very, very disconnected from everybody in the audience. For those who are people of the heart, for those who are people of feeling, to be in a convention of mental speculators makes one feel very lonely. Those who are extremely intelligent, simply deal with the mind and simply deal with concepts, feel very lonely when they're in an emotional group. So loneliness is not just a factor of being together with others. It's a factor of not being together with those with whom you relate and resonate with quite nicely. So it's very interesting to see how something which we would ordinarily just accept at face value, the definition of being alone, is not exactly what it seems. Let's take also, just for a contrast, the word rich, the quality of being rich. Sometimes people think, well, if we could just be rich, then all of our problems would be solved. Yet, richness is much more than simply wealth. Richness also refers to the richness of our experience, that our experiences are rich, because there are plenty of bored rich people. There are many persons who have money who go out and spend it in various ways, frivolously in nightlife, but who really don't have a rich life. They're using this opportunity of wealth to try to find a life rich with experience, but they don't necessarily find it. I can tell you an interesting story, which is really unbelievable, and it's happened more than once that I know of. People here and also in Europe and probably in Russia now, I don't know, they have what's called the lottery, where you buy a ticket and you hope to win millions of dollars, or at least, you know, tens or hundreds or whatever, when your number comes up and you win some prize. So some people have actually won 10 million, 15 million dollars in these lotteries. They've won the jackpot, it's called. And it's interesting to find that afterwards, sometimes these people say, winning this money was the worst thing that ever happened to us, because all of our relationships were destroyed. All of our friends started seeing us differently. Our whole life became troublesome because of this money. And yet there are people who are not very wealthy at all, but whose lives are very rich, who have a lot of experiences which are very deep, very meaningful, who have relationships which are deep and meaningful. Of course, that's not to say that if you have money, you can't have any of these things. But I'm making the point that simply having, for example, wealth does not mean your life is rich. In other words, these qualities, like loneliness or richness or anything, are not singular things. They have to be seen in the context of our consciousness. They have to be seen in the context of the way in which our energy manifests. And it's important that those who feel lonely understand what actually they are feeling. What really does it mean that they feel a lack of connection? Because if they can understand actually what this feeling of lack of connection actually means, then they can go very far towards rectifying that feeling of loneliness by making adjustments. And it's kind of obvious how you would do that. However, the interesting thing is, why don't lonely people think like this? I think often the reason is that this feeling of loneliness is very oppressive. It just absorbs one or wraps one up in some kind of bondage. And one just feels so badly about being alone that one's consciousness becomes permeated with this. One can't see beyond it. Let's say you're a sports person. Let's say you're an expert at tennis. And you feel this feeling, and you really thirst for somebody who can challenge you, somebody who can give you a experience in the sport which really would make you feel very fulfilled. Now, what is interesting is that if such a person were to seek out other tennis players and to seek out better and better opponents, to actively look for such personalities, that person could resolve to a large extent many of these problems surrounding loneliness. Similarly, those who are intellectuals or those who have a great capacity to think and to be conceptually aware, they should seek out such associations. In other words, by making the endeavor to find others or to just be with others like that, it will immediately give one the opportunity to advance in ways one couldn't imagine. By finding out such association, one can find out also something which is more than just an intellectual relationship. One can find companionship. Companionship means to find somebody who you share on different levels with. For example, I know many people who are a couple. They get together as husband and wife, or they get together with same-sex relationships. It doesn't matter. Nowadays, we are very liberal. So they don't really find companionship, yet they have love for each other. Because any long-term or any deeper relationship requires this meeting of companions where they actually share different elements in their life, where they actually, their energies resonate well together because they are really sharing deeply on a lot of levels. They can speak together, they feel together, they can do things together, they feel very close in companionship. I can give an example from the musical field, which, I don't know, maybe someone will understand, maybe not, but it's a good example. Let's say I'm playing in the key of C, and somebody else is playing in the key of C sharp. You're going to have a lot of problems. Whereas if I'm playing in the key of C and somebody's playing in the key of G, we only very, very rarely have a problem and maybe won't even notice it. In the key of C sharp, there are 5 different notes that are incompatible. In the key of G and C, there's only 1 note that, in fact, is not even incompatible. So if you're somehow or another harmonizing, even if in different ways, even if in very different ways, but if you can harmonize, then you can feel that companionship. But if there's no harmony, then no matter what you do, even if you're physically attracted, even if there's a lustful relationship that's really passionate, it will not work. But even in the musical example, there are other ways that things can be incompatible. Let's say you're playing in the same key. Let's say you've got some great compatibility that way. You're just in the same key. You're in the same tune. However, the rhythm of what you do is completely opposite. One is playing very slowly and peacefully. The other is playing hard and fast. What if somebody's playing in 4-4, somebody else is playing in 7-5? Believe me, that exists. And just try to make sense out of that. It's completely chaotic. Even though they're in the same key, they may be playing the same notes, they may be playing with the same exact song, but because the rhythm is not in tune, everything becomes chaos. Now, sometimes we meet people who we think we share a lot with. Maybe our concepts, maybe our ideas, maybe our way of being flows very well together. Maybe what we speak about really excites both of us. But there may be aspects which are so out of rhythm that we feel completely disturbed. It's very difficult to deal with it. I think last week, or maybe the week before, I gave the example of how babies become schizophrenic when their mothers are smiling, yet they are sending out energy of disturbance or dislike to the child. So there are these like two opposing kinds of signals being given and being received. So, for example, you may like somebody, the way they look, the way they talk, the way they act. Yet there's some things which are so out of rhythm with that person, you just never can connect. You don't feel comfortable. Anyway, you get the point. There's no need in continuing to discuss this over and over again. You get exactly what I'm saying. You all have experience of it. That's why we find it so incredibly difficult to find some partners in our lives. Yet, there is something you can do to change all of that very rapidly if you want. Now, I know that some of you have had some fairly intimate connection with higher beings, with your guides, with angels, and of course, contact with God, with Radha and Krishna, or Gaur-Nitai, or demigods, or any of the beings who are of a more aware nature and consciousness. Now, I know there are people who are lonely out there and who pray to the deities, help me somehow or another not be so lonely. Help me connect with others who are somehow compatible with me, who can share with me these experiences. And there are amongst those persons some who've actually got an inner bitterness towards the deity or towards God for not fulfilling that desire. They blame God. Why are you letting me stay in this situation? Don't you care about me? Now, there are amongst those persons and other persons also in that group who go before God or the deity who feel that the solution to the problem of their life is to renounce all relationships, to be detached from any and all relationships and any and all desires to find really deep and significant companionship in their lives. Some people say they cannot handle it. They cannot handle this constant pain that comes from being out of rhythm or out of tune with everyone else. Therefore, the solution is to renounce all such capacity, renounce all such relationships, and simply try to focus on the Supreme, because that must be the message you are getting from the deity, because the deity does not fulfill these other experiences you wish to have deeply. Now, I would like to make a suggestion to such persons that they are seeking out the wrong thing from the wrong personalities. After all, if you're sick, you don't go to your physics professor and ask your physics professor to somehow or another give you an equation to make you feel better. You go to a doctor who has such qualification and capacity and who knows how to deal with such situations. Some people, they want to go directly to the demigods, for instance, for some connection between them and another. They go to some demigods or goddesses and pray. But they don't know that there's a way to do it and a way not to do it. So therefore, out of ignorance, not knowing how to do it, they don't succeed and they become frustrated with those entities as well. Now, there is, to a certain extent, a hierarchical arrangement in the universe, but without the elitism or exploitation that is usually there when we think about a hierarchy. In fact, let's use the word structure in the universe, where there are different beings that have different roles to play to help support the whole structure and help offer service to the people within it. And let's understand that when one really wishes to accomplish something within one's personal life, when one wishes to do something which is so deeply important to one, one should go to the proper personalities for such resolution. And that's where these wonderful angels come to play. Now, most people think of angels as some winged fairies who fly here and there and do good deeds. But they can do much more than that. If you sincerely request the help of angels, they are very eager to fulfill your request. They have such a mentality and they have such a heart which is of pure service. They are very, very willing, very, very eager, and very, very able to give you all kinds of help in ways which you would be amazed if you knew. Now, most people think you shouldn't bother angels, you shouldn't ask for mundane things, you shouldn't ask them to serve you. You don't want to disturb them. But they exist for this. This is why they are there. They want you to do that. There are so many unemployed angels nowadays, you cannot imagine. They are thankful to you when you engage them in a way which is important for you. They say, thank you for engaging us. I remember when Jas Muheen was the first time in St. Petersburg, she said she uses angels to get herself a good parking place in a difficult situation. And everybody was surprised. What? Using angels to get a parking place? I mean, why would we do that? I mean, we would ask for something glorious or idealistic. A parking place is just some ordinary, simple thing. Well, I think she told that for a few reasons. The first is that to show you that you can depend on angels to do even simple things for you, and they easily and willingly comply. There are many junior angels out there trying to earn their wings, sorry for the pun, and they are engaged in ways that you couldn't imagine, even simple little things. They are very grateful for the opportunity. And giving them the opportunity is good for them, too. But more importantly, I think when you use angels for such things, you start to develop a faith, not only that they're there, and not only that they do respond, but that you can have results in ways that are more significant than just simply finding a parking spot. And when you understand this by experience and by practice, you can even get to the point of calling out to your angels, please give me the association, give me that companionship I so thirst for by guiding me into those situations. You can ask angels to make an arrangement within which you can work, which you can feel companionship, you can feel satisfied, you can get those experiences you thirst for. And you can also ask them to give you awareness and to steer you away from those situations which are going to give you ultimately trouble. You can ask them to feed your consciousness, feed your awareness with opportunities. If you're sick, you can ask them to guide you into a proper kind of a health. You can even ask them to do healing directly on you with their healing energy. If you're good at it, you can even take your own hand and try to feel energy coming from these angels directly through your own hand to heal any problem you might have. If you're a musician, you can ask the angels to play along with you. If you're an artist, the angels can paint along with you. If you're a business person, you can specifically ask for business angels who will do business along with you. Even if you simply want to dance, you can have angels dance with you. You cannot imagine how thankful they are when they get an opportunity to render such deep service to you. And the thanks you give to them, that really deep gratitude you give to them for helping you, is reward. They just drink that reward with such great happiness. You can request angels to just help you find that personality, to just bring that personality and you together so that you can actually experience that companionship, that resonance that is so important for you. And when you feel that completeness that comes, then you can think about working with the angels to do great service for people in this world. Don't underestimate the power of these personalities. Because they are pure service, they have great capacity to assist us in the ways in which we ask. But we have hesitation to do this because we think, some of us, I don't deserve it. But the answer is very simple. If you don't deserve it, and everyone else also thinks you don't deserve it, you're not going to get it. But if you sincerely request, at least you give your best opportunity to get. But in reality, the only one who thinks you don't deserve it is you. So, to somehow or another learn to connect with your angels is the next step. Now, I know out of many of you who are listening or will listen to this discussion, you already have tried, you have already succeeded, you already have some result in connecting with the angels. But for those who do not yet have such experience, here is a very simple way to do it. All you have to do is simply send out your energetic thought form to them. In other words, it is your energy which is empowering your intention to communicate out to them with some words and feelings. And you can also verbalize it. You can speak it. You don't have to just do it mentally. You can also speak it at the same time in terms of some kind of declaration, but not specifically. You can even do it on behalf of other people. Let's say somebody you know is suffering in some way or another. You can ask, "Dear angels, please will two of you go to that person and give them comfort, give them strength, and show them the way out of that situation." So you can send angels to others to be of service. If somebody's angry at you, you can send angels to that person to calm them down or to make them feel better about it. If you wish to do great service, you can do so many services by having contact with the angels. So you have to communicate that desire. For example, right now, I can do that for anybody who is listening to this broadcast or who will listen to the recorded broadcast. What could be the harm? I can ask to all of the angels who are there out in the universe to please go to those persons who are listening and give them help and assistance to fulfill their desires for companionship and association, so they can have a rich and deep experience in their life, and to arrange things so that will take place. And you can see the results of this in subtle ways, in very interesting little nuances of opportunities and possibilities that can come to you. But when these opportunities and nuances come, you can't keep saying, "No, no, 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 I don't want, I don't deserve, I'm not good enough." Simply say thank you and move gratefully into that space. Not that if a door is open, you barge through and scream, "I'm there!" But you gratefully enter into that space with flowing energy and gratefully accept it with thank you. So this kind of understanding of how to deal with these beautiful angelic energies really requires your personal experience with it. And that's why it's important that one learns to use angels in these very, shall we say, simple ways, so that you gradually gain your understanding, your confidence in yourself and in them. This is important. It's important that you get your experiences. It's important that you take this seriously, because it's important that you feel good about yourself, you feel good about your life, and you feel good about others. That's important. You might wonder why I've been speaking about this, and the honest answer is, I heard a song last night, which every time I hear it, it just hits me so strongly. How important is that message? I don't know if you know this song, but it starts off, one is the loneliest number you can ever see. Da-dun-dun-dun. It's just such a deep thing whenever I hear that song, because even the Beatles said, ah, look at all those lonely people. There are so many lonely people who do not have to be lonely. There is no need to be lonely. Okay, sometimes some people want to just be away from all others because they had such painful experiences with people. But that's a temporary thing. Outside of this temporary vacation from others, there is no need. There's no, like, medicinal effect of being lonely. Okay, that's also not perfectly correct, because sometimes just being alone has very therapeutic effects in that it makes you think about, well, why am I in this situation? But that doesn't last. That kind of situation of the therapy, or that kind of effect of the therapy, has a limited value. You can think about yourself so much time, so many hours, so many days. After a while, you say, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do something positive. I need to find out some companionship. And therefore, these methods of gaining companionship, using angelic energies, using the angels, it's a very positive step. And somehow or another, arranging this, somehow or another, dealing with this is very important in everybody's lives. So learn how to use these angels. Learn how to just be grateful for that fact that they're there and they're willing to help us in this way. And make a positive change in your life through active endeavors. Okay, so I think we take a little break there, and then we can, after 10 minutes or so, take questions, which I'd be very interested to answer if you've got any. And let's see what happens after that. Okay, 10-minute break. I have two very interesting questions, and I'm going to take them. Hopefully be able to get more. So the first question I have is, if we don't know the name of some specific angel that we should call, can we just declare our problem and ask for help for any angel who comes? Now, I know that sometimes people, they think that you have to have some kind of personal relationship and some kind of personal connection to your own personal specific angel. And if you don't have that, you can't make a communication. But it's not so. Angels are rather organized as a group. So if you call out to the angels, you call out into the atmosphere around you, those who are specifically empowered or specifically authorized to deal with your situations will answer you. Therefore, when you do learn how to communicate with angels and everything like that, you will gradually develop a feeling for who it is that you are communicating and contacting, and thus you will know them very well. But names are not very important in this. A name is a designation. And we don't really need to work with designations here. We're working with energies here. So to deal with the angels, you just simply have to call out to them and communicate with whichever ones are there. And it is just perfectly fine. I hope that answered the question. And I have another question here. It's a question. Oh, I'll go back to the angels again. Can we contact angels with the help of a pendulum? Well, sure. I mean, you can contact angels with your mind, so why not with something else, too? You don't need to contact angels with the pendulum unless you're specifically looking for answers to things, which I would say then you really don't want to make communication with angels like that. Now, the idea is that angels, they're not the best persons to ask questions to. They're very good for making arrangements and for assisting and bringing together energies and everything. But when it comes to specifically answering questions, I don't think that they're the best personalities to involve in that. They're not having an intellectual connection with them is not as valuable as an energetic one. There are other personalities that you can bring into your life as guides or whoever who can help you with intellectual or conceptual things. And therefore, you don't really need a pendulum or any other kind of a tool to connect to angels. You can do it directly just by your loving energy in a specific energetic thought form sent out to the angels. They will receive it rapidly. But then you may wonder, well, how do I have an interaction with them? Well, if you think of the example of, like, say, the business angels who help you with that, the interaction is in other kinds of ways. They help your energy transform into the right kind of mood, the right kind of attitude to do things. They bring you in connection with others who will help you, and you will help them. And when your mind or actions or thoughts or your words start going off in a way which would be counterproductive to what it is that you wish them to arrange for you, they can give you that feeling. They give you that idea or that doubt that what you're doing is not right. So the best way to listen, quote unquote, to angels is to be aware of everything around you. Be aware of what's happening. Be aware of opportunities. Be aware of situations that are being set up. Start to be aware of how things are unfolding. Learn to feel what is happening. Learn to just be aware of the different, influences or the different suggestions that come to you and how they could be related to what it is you need to do. It's a question of being open to it. And that you do by intending to be open to it. Now, at that point, a lot of people can have different problems, because they could then open themselves up to other kinds of energies or other kinds of influences which are not favorable to them as angels are. So one has to learn to distinguish between different forms of energies. So it requires a greater awareness. It requires an awareness of the quality of the energies that are coming to you. And to do that, one can ask the angels to make one or help one be aware and to guide one when one is not aware out of the situation where an unfavorable influence can be accepted. But above all, just don't start following something because it's in your mind. Don't just because something's in your head and you think it came from an angel, don't start doing something because of that. You have to take every single thing that you hear, every single thing that you understand, and filter it through your intelligence and start to see things according to how they fit within your life, not just to accept something which may have no connection just because it's in your head. Therefore, it's very important that one not become some kind of a foolish person or like some child who'll just follow anybody. You have to discriminate between what is something that you can accept, what is something you can't accept, and learn by your experiences afterwards. Therefore, the way angels deal with you is a very good way, and don't try to get more out of it than that, because they guide you in the right direction. They also arrange situations for you. Don't start asking them for a detailed list of things to do each day. Rather, one should be aware of the movements of the energy and accept also those energetic thought forms which are impacting upon you and deal with them as you need to deal with them as you grow. There's no need for rituals. There's no need for fasting. There's no need to do things in a very special kind of a way. There's no need for any particular kind of arrangement to come in contact with angels. You just have to speak out. You have to just do it, just like you can speak with any other person. It's a question of just communicating with them. It's a question of simply knowing you can, knowing they are there, and gaining the experiences which build upon that faith. Now I have another question. I have a lot of questions popped in here, but here's another question from the previous class. What should an ordinary person do to gain after death a specific destination with a specific personality like Lord Shiva or Lord Krishna or whatever? Well, actually, the topics and discussion of today's class or today's lectures or today's discussions are intimately connected with this particular question. In other words, we spoke about the energetic compatibility between people, the coming in connection between people who vibrate or harmonize in a compatible way, tonally and rhythmically, when we use the music example. The same principles work with coming in connection with these beings that you mentioned, Lord Shiva or Lord Krishna or whatever. That's why all of those who wish to be gopis and dance with Krishna in the Rasa dance and then look through the bushes the rest of the time, they tune themselves to this by constantly hearing, constantly thinking about, constantly engaging in such an idea. So they tune themselves in that particular way and enter into that reality, if in some cases, after death or even in this lifetime. It all boils down to making a resonance, an energetic resonance within your heart, within your consciousness, within your awareness of that which you wish to attain. So the exact same principles are there. It's just a question of how you wish to utilize them. And then I have questions. If somebody has a conflict with another and keeps meditating about the negative or bad aspects of that person, one creates more negativity by doing it. So how do you ultimately get in harmony in such a situation? Well, in this question is the answer to the question. So the person who asked the question has already answered their own question. If you're meditating on the bad aspects of a person, you create more negativity. So how are you supposed to get harmony? The way you, if you really have to get harmony with somebody who you actually don't feel very harmonious with, then you have to meditate on their positive aspects. And simply don't accept their negative aspects at all. In this way, you're adjusting them by behavioristic techniques. But you've been asking this question again and again in different ways, maybe 5, 6, 7 times. So I would say that, you know, you're trying to squeeze blood from a stone. Why don't you move on? Find somebody else. But if you want to just insist on squeezing that blood right out of that stone, well, then you have to just avoid thinking about any of the negative aspects which so bother you. But that's not very easy to do. That's like, don't think of a pink elephant. Especially, let's say somebody has a particular characteristic which you can't stand, drives you crazy, and you're trying not to think about it. Well, your mind is going to go straight to that all the time when you try not to think about it. The only way to accept it is just to accept that's what they do. Just like all kids, they pick their nose and they shoot it here and there. And if you're somebody who's really agitated by that, there's just nothing you can do about it. You're just going to, and the parent just accepts it. That's what kids do. That's what this kid does. So, okay, fine. I love you. I love your nose. So you can either find somebody else to associate with, or you can try to just simply amplify their positive qualities in your mind. Or you can just simply accept that's the way they are. What do you think? That's not much of an answer, but okay. And I got another question here. Somebody's starting to read Conversations to God and like to know my opinion if it is really God speaking. I have no idea if it's really, really, really God speaking or not. But I don't really care, because what's being said 98% of it is just really great, and I couldn't care less who's speaking because it's just nice. And a lot of the time, some of the stuff that's said is so spectacular, I think, my God, who else could have said such a thing? But that doesn't matter. And sometimes, especially towards the end of the three books, some things are being said, and I think to myself, well, you know, Neil, he got tired and started sticking his own brain into it. But that doesn't matter. Who cares? I think it was like that because you're supposed to use your own brain to figure out if it makes sense or not. And if you accept anything, absolutely, 100%, every bit of it, just because it came from God, you think, then you're opening yourself up to big mistakes. You should always make sure that your brain is an important factor in any consideration you make from anything you read or anything you hear or anything you do. So this is important. It's important that you have respect for yourself, and you have respect for what it is you do, and you have respect for your life, and you have respect for your capacities. That's important. Okay, and now we have another question. If one doesn't know who she wants to contact to, I guess connect to, after death, how to understand with who one is or who one may be resonating with? Huh. I hope I understand this question properly, but I would think that, let's say you don't really believe in any particular kind of a destination after death. Well, that's fine. Well, I don't think you should worry too much about connecting to any particular destination because you don't really have any particular destination in mind. You don't need to have one because you can just be the best possible person you can be, which is the same in either case, whether you know where you're going or where you want to go or not. You just be the best possible person you can be, evolve in the best possible way you can evolve, and after death you will be with others who are of the same quality as you, whether you believe you're going to go somewhere or not, because that's the only thing that happens anyway. Some of the biggest shocks come when a person has believed their whole life in a certain reality after death. And then when they enter into that reality after death, they find out that they are still resonating the same way they really are in life, in that reality, and what they thought it should be is not what it is. What you are, you are. You cannot change that by imagining yourself to be something else. You can put yourself in a reality of your own creation, which is, according to some people, an illusion. But it's the reality of your own creation. So you can put yourself there. You have that power. You know, that's the funny thing about it. You can create a reality of your own creation, which some people would say is an illusion. But for you, you don't care because it's what you want. So who is there to judge if your reality is right or wrong? The worst thing, though, is to accept someone else's reality as what you want. And then when you actually get out of this body in your situation of transferal of life to another platform, you realize that what you are and that other person's reality don't match. And it becomes obvious to you, and you become bewildered, and you say, how could I have lived someone else's life like that? Why did I think like that? And you even argue up there with those personalities who you meet. You say, no, this is not right. This is not the way it was supposed to be. I think this is one of the common situations for religious fundamentalists. They hit that barrier of reality after they die. And they have to deal with the situation being other than what they thought. And they have to transform. It takes a little while. I don't know how much time in our time, but they have to transform their whole consciousness towards what really is rather than what they thought it should be. So therefore, one should be a seeker of the truth in this lifetime, not a believer in the truth. Those who are seekers are always looking out for what is. Those who are believers are just trying to convince themselves in better and better ways what it is. Believers say astrology is for demons, mystic things are for witches, all these kinds of activities for understanding energy and everything is just all witchcraft. You should be burned. It is wrong. It is evil. It is not shastric. It is completely low class. It is mode of ignorance or passion. It is bad. You should avoid all these things because you should only believe certain things. And those who are seekers of the truth are those who are looking to see what is actually there. What is the reality that is actually there? They don't care what it is. They're not trying to make it to be something. They don't need it to fit in a certain form. They just want to know what it is. That's all. They have an open mind. They're not busy judging and condemning things because they don't fit in a certain form. They just want to know what is the form. That's all. Religious believers and modern scientists are very much the same. And even though they argue with each other, their methodology is very similar. Modern science has its prejudice. Modern science says this cannot be because it is not in our formulas. And the believers say this cannot be because this is not in our books. Therefore, the evolutionists throw out millions of pieces of contradictory data because it doesn't fit in their belief system. And all capacities to bend spoons, to read minds, to see things remotely, to influence others with the mind or mystic yogic powers are all considered to be fairy tales. Whatever doesn't fit into a scientific mold is rejected. Similarly, believers do the exact same thing, but they use a different criteria as to what should be rejected. And therefore, the greatest scientists who we even recognize in the scientific community are those thinkers who weren't following everyone else, but were just trying to understand things from a totally different and new perspective. And similarly, those spiritualists who are trying to do things simply to understand what is the truth and to simply come to an understanding which is relevant to everybody right now are those who don't follow in a box. Okay, the question was why we don't have evidence that the devotees of Lord Chaitanya asked anything from angels. I suppose that when Lord Chaitanya was there, you didn't need to ask anybody of anything because you had Lord Chaitanya there. He knew what to do and you would ask him. Usually they asked him. And maybe they, when they talked about Apsaras or they talked about Gandharvas or whatever, they were talking about the same angels. And maybe they didn't even want to admit it or write it down or who knows what. Or maybe they didn't even do it. But they also didn't broadcast using the internet and cameras and slow computers. Their lives and our lives are different. I would assume that at that time, they were much more in connection with all of these natural energies in a very natural way. They didn't have to endeavor to do it. Their energy, their consciousness was so aware of all these higher energies, they didn't have to specifically call out and say, please come to me like we do. We're in a fairly dull situation nowadays. We need to do it actively. For example, in those days, there are many evidences, especially in the deity worship, people knew all about the various yogic techniques, the pranayama or the various other techniques that one would use, because whenever there was a instruction, they would simply say, do pranayama. They wouldn't say how or why, and there weren't any specific instructions how to do it. It's like nowadays when we say, wash the dishes, or we say, put the dishwasher on. We don't have to worry about how to do it. It's just common knowledge. There were many things in the society and the culture and the people that were just accepted as so ordinary at that time that there was no need to specifically draw attention to it. And that is certainly a factor that can be there for why things are not specifically mentioned in a particular way. I don't know. But whether or not something was done in Lord Chaitanya's time or not done in Lord Chaitanya's time, I don't use as a factor in whether or not I will deal with it now. Who's the head of all angels? Well, there are archangels, of course. That's a very Christian concept, yet in fact, it's a very useful concept. The archangels like Michael, Gabriel, or others, there's five major archangels. These are very powerful angels who are overseeing or who have that capacity to make sure everything in the angelic realm runs just as it should. I'm sorry for such a quick answer, but it was kind of that kind of question. Is that okay with him? Who's the head of archangels? Well, then you're up there. Then you're up there in the realm of God. And any specific personality who God may wish to have between the Supreme and the archangels, I suppose. But I don't think archangels need to have anybody telling them what to do. They already know what to do, and they do it perfectly. They are self-contained and perfect units to perform whatever services they wish to do or they need to do. You know, after a while, there's no more need to have people in charge. That's a very human requirement. At one point in time, everyone just knows what to do, being that they're connected to the source, connected to the force, so to speak. Here we have a question. Can we ask any other spirits of trees, mountains, etc., in the same way as we approach angels? Can we communicate with everything around us constantly with the same effect? No. It's, again, the same thing. If you approach your physics professor for an equation that's going to solve your headache, it's a mistaken approach. It's a question of approaching, for example, trees for something else. Trees just give you of themselves as they are. You shouldn't start asking them for other things. If you stand with your back to a tree with your arms wrapped around the tree and you just feel the energy of the tree and you share love with the tree can give you enormous strength and stability. It's a wonderful experience and feeling. So one has to know what each entity is to give. Otherwise, if one asks for that which is not capable of being given, one simply becomes disappointed. Now, the next question in this line is the same way. Can you communicate with the dead? Well, again, I would say you have to know what it is you wish to communicate. You have to know who it is that you're communicating with. There are various manners or various ways in which you can communicate with the dead, but it depends on the dead person's present situation. In other words, according to the dead person's present situation, you may get a different kind of a communicative process going on. Some persons, when they depart from this body, they like to watch over those who they left. They like to go and see the persons who have left until that some kind of ritual takes place where everybody has closure on the departure, and then they move on to where they wish to go or where they're supposed to go. During that time, there's a lot of connection, a lot of feeling, a lot of communication with that person when they are there, very close to you. That's a very special form of that communication, but it usually doesn't last that long. Then that person goes to another destination. But sometimes they leave behind elementals or energetic thought forms with which you can communicate. But that communication you have with those forms are only are limited to the energy that was placed in them at the time of the departure of that person. In other words, you're not getting any current information. You're getting information that was current at that time. So in other words, you are communicating with what they have left behind, not what they are now. Now, in a lot of cases, that's very satisfying because that's all you really wanted anyway. In some cases, that's totally annoying because you've been left with the negative quality of the person being projected upon you if it's something, a negative relationship created. In that case, it's better to burn up that energy, that residual energy, that elemental, because it has no positive use in your life. Well, maybe it does have a positive use if you did something wrong and that person is just informing you of it, but that's a specific case. And then sometimes there's a situation where the person cannot be freed from all the attachments of this life and they are there as a ghost, dying to have communication with you or dying to have some kind of contact, but cannot. Communicating with such personalities is quite easy because you've got the full consciousness right there, very close, within just one dimensional gap that you can communicate with. But usually that's not much fun either, and those persons should also be assisted to go to that destination where they have to go. But there's one more situation which is not commonly discussed, not commonly understood, but which has a greater impact on our lives. And that's the situation where a person has gone through these various stages, has gone to their destination, but then returns as a conscious communicator to do some service in this world. There are some examples of people who are aware of that when they speak about ascended masters. They talk about people who have attained some mastery and who now communicate with us in this lifetime to give us the fruit of their wisdom, or doctors, or whatever. Zhao Diyus uses them. But there are also others who are not ascended masters in that particular usage of the word, who can be of service to others by warning or helping or trying to guide or do something good about it from that other platform. Such personalities are not ghosts. They're not thought elementals. They are not there just to give you comfort until they move on. They are there out of their own free will to give you assistance or give the world assistance. They do this because they feel they can be of more service from that platform than they were here on the physical platform. People have said that Daskalos, for instance, decided that it's better to leave this planet, or leave his body, and be of service from the other platform because he could be of more service without having to have the hassle of so many people demanding things from him all the time. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, but I do know that he is available for anybody who is a healer to assist in the healing process even today, and not just some elemental. There is an actual conscious personality with life force and energy who can work with you or through you to perform that service. After all, Jesus Christ performs the same service for healing even today, when called upon. All great personalities who have accepted that role can be called upon and can work now if you just know how to connect to them. Now, how? Well, yes, you can think deeply about a person and you can try to connect by a request. And you can try to hear to see if you're getting some connection. But the real way to connect to a person is to resonate with that which that person wishes to connect to you. For example, just like Daskalos or the example of Jesus Christ, every healer knows that when you are doing healing, and you're getting better at it, and you have that capacity to bring down energy to use it, calling such healers to help you is not a difficult affair because you are in tune with what it is they wish to give. So if you want to connect, you have to connect to the person in a way in which they wish to be connected to. Otherwise, the connection won't happen. For example, if you want to connect to Daskalos to help you make ice cream, I don't think that would be very successful. Maybe, I mean, of course, he has a sense of humor. He might want to help you in that way, but you get the point. Modify that. He has a very good recipe. There's another question here. Again, about conversations with God. Speak a little more about recreating ourselves. Well, factually speaking, everything we're doing now in these discussions and our interactions and our meditations and so on is all about recreating ourselves. So we don't really need to speak more about it. We're doing it. Okay, I'm going to stop there. And I'm going to then do a little meditation for bringing in the angelic energies to somehow or another connect us with the angelic energies. So I thank you all for participating in this broadcast, and I hope that your ongoing and ever-increasing communication with your angels and other angels and being of service to others in this world and establishing yourself very properly in your own self, in your own identity, in your own capacity to help and assist and be that love that you are, will just grow and expand day by day. So I thank you very much, and I say good morning or good afternoon or good evening or wherever. Have a great life.